This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Mitch Tite.
And I'm Bonnie North. Kirsten Johnson has spent a quarter of a century standing behind a camera. As a cinematographer, she's traveled around the world, meeting people and hearing their stories and creating images of their lives. Her new documentary, Camera Person, puts those images into a different perspective.
Camera Person is an amalgam of unused footage from 24 of the documentaries she's worked on, along with some personal footage. The film will be appearing at the Milwaukee Film Festival this Sunday at the Downer Theater. Johnson spoke with Lake Effect's Joy Powers about her work as a camera person and about the purpose of her film.
One of the things that I was interested in revealing is sort of what's around the edges of what we often see in documentaries, and to acknowledge all of the people who are involved in the process and to acknowledge the process itself. But I mean, I think it's interesting that you use those words, curate yourself. Like, I think that is something of a new generation. And certainly in the time when I started filming, in some of the places where I film some of the scenes that are in Camera Person, you know, being filmed was not a common thing. It was not something that everybody knew. And now we live in a world where pretty much everyone can be a camera person. And many people all over the world are familiar with what it is to be filmed, see the images they make of themselves, etc. But, you know, I do come from this old school generation of documentarians who existed before the internet and before cell phones gave this ubiquity of imagery everywhere in the world.
Do you feel like now everywhere you go, people know what it means to be on camera?
Well, I think people always have ideas about what it might mean. And I think all of us are wrong in a way, because none of us can know the future. And so we never know what being filmed will mean for the future of our lives or the people who loved us. But I do think we all engage in this sort of promise making around being filmed, you know, and in places where there has been little filming or people's stories haven't been documented, there can be a real hope about what being filmed might mean for changing circumstances, for getting the word out about problems that have never been discussed, that kind of thing, right? But I think we often don't know what the promise is that we're engaging in with people when we film.
I think a lot of interviewers and journalists, they can relate to this film for a lot of reasons. One being, you know, there's a lot of stuff that gets left on the cutting room floor that really humanizes a person, but for whatever reason, you know, just doesn't work in the conversation. I especially felt that way when I was watching the footage you included from Trapped.
Mm.
Why did you include those moments?
For me, there's several things going on in the scene from Trapped, which is a scene in which you see a young woman who's seeking an abortion. She does not want to be identified for many reasons, including her own safety. So I'm just filming her hands. And, you know, one of the things that I've learned over the years of filming is that often people's hands tell a different story than what their voice is telling. And in the scene, Don Porter, who's the director of the film, is saying to her, you know, she's sort of berating herself and saying she feels so terrible and she feels like a bad person. And Don says to her, you cannot call yourself a bad person. And I'm there with Judy Karp, the sound woman. And I think I say something like, you know, you're making us all cry. And we've all had unintended pregnancies. And, you know, my speaking that in that moment, I certainly never imagined that that would be part of Don's film. Because as often is the case with any films that we make, we're not a part of the story, right? In principle. But what we're trying to do as the camera people and the sound people is to give people a space to explore their own emotions and their own perspective on camera. And like you're saying, you as a journalist can relate to Camera Person, because I think, you know, that's our work, is to create a space of intimacy where people feel like they can speak the things they need to speak. And sometimes those things can be very hard, and it's trying to create a place of empathy. There's no judgmentalism in the way that we're listening, because we're trying to elicit openness.
That was one of the moments that I thought was really challenging, but there are a lot of really challenging moments in the film. Because people are being open, You know, it reminds me of this sort of classic journalist's dilemma. Do you bear witness or do you do something? And in some ways, I saw you go both ways. For most of us, this is very theoretical, right? But what is it like making that decision in the moment?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the fascinating part about being a camera person. And being a camera person, you are obligated to be incredibly intent in the present. There is so much going on. You don't know what's going to happen. You are the person who's responsible for the technical aspects of managing the camera, of course. But more importantly, you are responsible for where are you in space, allowing the material that you're filming to capture different aspects that can then in the future be cut into a scene that will be a part of a movie whose story you don't know yet. So it's this incredibly sort of active space of the present where oftentimes if I'm really in the zone, I'll feel like I'm watching a movie and I will just be compelled, say, you know, down the hallway as a boxer is coming at me after having lost a match he really wanted to win. Those are the moments where I feel like I'm actually watching a movie as I'm filming it.
Even though you're obviously sort of the person bearing witness, do you also feel like you become a part of their story?
Well, I mean, that's what this very strange thing about camera work is that, you know, the lens takes you deeper into a person than the eye can do. So that you can, you know, with a long lens, you can look deep into someone's eyes in a close-up in a way that you would have to be, you know, sort of standing right up next to them to do in person. And there is a phenomena that happens where I often feel like I'm losing myself in the experience of the person that I'm filming because I so can feel their physical presence. And yet one of the sequences in the film is me following people, you know, into a mine in Colombia, down a hillside in Myanmar, behind chained prisoners in Missouri. I'm following all these people. I'm as close to being in their footsteps as I can, but I can't walk in their footsteps. And that really is a metaphor for this dissonance one feels as a camera person where, you know, you're filming something and you're like, I am this, but you're not. You're not that person as close as you're trying to get and sort of as successfully as you convey what it is to be them to an audience, you are still not them. And what's going on inside of them is still a mystery to you.
One of the most interesting parts of the film is watching how the shots are set up. You have a number of moments like this where you're filming through a car window or you see sort of the whole scene and then what you choose to look at. And it goes back to this idea of curation, you know, what's left in the conversation and also what's kept out.
The thing that you're saying, which I find so interesting, is that there's now a generation of people who thinks about self-representation, who thinks about representation and knows that in many ways the representation of individuals can be changed by the way they are filmed, by the light, by the frame, by what's left out, by what's put in. And that's what I really trusted in the making of Camera Person was the sophistication of the audience and all of us sharing this world in which we have a vocabulary of images, a vocabulary of cinema that allows us to understand how it is constructed. And I do feel like that's part of what I'm really enjoying about Camera Person coming out into the world is this affirmation that the dilemmas that I face, the ethical quandaries that I struggle with, my laying those bare is starting conversations with audience members who have this really sophisticated understanding of how images function.
There's this one point in the film where you jump from one image to another. And because I was watching it taking notes, I started writing down the different places, realizing that at a certain point there were just, I don't know, a dozen maybe images of places and objects that were the cause of a lot of suffering. What was it like shooting these sites, knowing what happened there?
I think because of the career that I've had, I've ended up being in a lot of places where great atrocities have occurred. And there is always an incredible dissonance from sort of what you imagine to what the place is. And you can be in a place like the slave house in Elmina, Ghana, or you can be in Auschwitz, and it is completely different from what you imagined it would be. For one, it's real. It's a real place. And it's very hard to know to what extent you're projecting your knowledge of what happened there on the space or what you can actually feel. And then as a camera person, you know, there I was in churches in Rwanda where there had been, you know, people had been attacked by machete and killed by the thousands, and the blood stains were still on the bricks. The blood stains were still on, you know, the statue of Mary in the church. And you're trying to figure out, how in the world can I even begin to imagine what happened here? How can I find a way to film that might translate what it is? You know, one of the themes for me in this film is the sort of inadequacy of my capacity to even approach anywhere near the expression of what the horror has been. But on another level, I feel like one of the things that I've found over the years is how violence remains. So I've filmed 50 years after genocides, 30 years after, 10 years after, 5 years after, 6 months after, sometimes in the middle of. And what's really horrifying in some ways is to realize how long the effects of violence stay. And in some ways, they are in the land, the effects are in people, they reverberate from generation to generation. And so I start camera person sort of with a phrase that says, you know, these images leave me, they've marked me, and they leave me wondering still. And this question of the way in which violence reverberates, I think, is one of the ongoing questions of what I've experienced, of like, how does that function and what is that? I mean, sort of, we wonder how violence happens in the first place, and then where does it go?
You talk to a lot of people who have experienced a lot of violence, and, you know, you're talking to them about often what are the worst moments in their lives. How does that affect you at the end of the day?
Well, let me just go slightly different direction from that. I mean, I think that's one of the dilemmas that I face, because that's often what we're asked to do as journalists, is to only speak of the worst moment in people's lives. And there's a scene in the film where, you know, I'm talking with this older woman from Bosnia, and the translator is really encouraging her to speak about what she experienced during the war, and she clearly does not want to. And at a certain point, I kind of can't help myself and interrupt her and ask her about her fabulous fashion sense. And, you know, in many ways, that was sort of out of line on my part as a camera person. But it shows the way in which at certain moments in my career, I sort of couldn't take it anymore, the way in which we as journalists often only look at people as victims, even though, you know, our task is to bear witness to the terrible things that people have experienced. There's a way in which only speaking of people's victimization feels like a way of dehumanizing them on top of the dehumanizing things they have already lived through. So that's one of my struggles as a camera person. But certainly over the course of working on this film, I did come to encounter the way in which doing this work at scale, so taking in many stories of other people's pain and trauma, which is the case of many working professionals like police people, like nurses, like doctors, like teachers, social workers, we all hear many stories that are incredibly painful. And we all feel, I think, that it is obscene in many ways to dwell on the way it affects us, because we're not the people who actually experienced the violence, right? We are the people hearing the tale. But, you know, what I'm interested in is this space in which images actually do mark us as human beings. We, you know, we say the phrase indelible images, and we all know now that it's having an impact on us to look at violent imagery, that violent imagery can be generative in ways, you know, sort of some of the mass shootings that are happening, some of the terrorist acts that occur, they then generate more So this sort of question of what we film, what we look at, I feel like is a very alive topic of conversation for all of us on a global level as humans at this moment in history.
Well, Kirsten Johnson, thank you so much for sharing this footage with us. And thanks for coming on Lake Effect.
Oh, it was really a pleasure. Look forward to talking with you more.
Kirsten Johnson is the director, cinematographer, and star of Camera Person, which will make several appearances at the Milwaukee Film Festival, including a screening this Sunday at the Downer Theater. For more information on Camera Person and the festival itself, you can go to WUWM.com. And of course, that's where you can go to make your contribution of support this morning on Milwaukee Public Radio, for Milwaukee Public Radio, and for Lake Effect specifically. Mitch Teich and I are here for a few moments to ask for your financial support.
414-227-3210 or WUWM.com/give. And I was looking at the schedule and, you know, we just have a few more days of this this fall membership drive. And this is really your last opportunity to support the programming you hear at 10 o'clock every weekday morning and at 3 o'clock on weekend afternoons. Lake Effect is really a unique resource. I hate calling it a resource. It's a unique show in the Milwaukee area. And we hope you'll voice your support for it right now by calling 414-227-3210 and or going to WUWM.com/give and help us reach our hourly goal of $700.
Coming up next, a kinder, more supportive take on the Shark Tank concept seeks to help would-be business owners on Milwaukee's Near West Side. We'll learn more about it when Lake Effect continues right here on Milwaukee Public Radio.